returning with you here. And I hope that the things we have planned are things that you'll share in that excitement and come and be a part of that. I look forward to the week we have together, settled in at the Smiths, and look forward to spending time with them this week. And I look forward to getting to know the Hammonds. I look forward to meeting them and know of their work and appreciate the work they're doing and look forward to spending some time with them. The lessons that are on the screen before you are the things that I have planned, and I am excited about presenting them, and I hope you'll come and be a part of that. And I want to tell you just a little bit about those, that you might have one that you want to bring a friend or a neighbor to come in to hear one of those particular topics. This evening we're going to talk about the church at Ephesus in Ephesians, or in Romans, Revelation chapter 2, verses 1 to 7. We'll talk about the church that left its first love. Could that be us? We'll talk about that this evening. And then on Monday evening, we'll be looking at a very simple first principle study on the church. And the matter of, is one faith as good as another faith? And that's a fundamental question we need to raise. Is one faith as good as another faith? That's the one you want to bring your friend or neighbor to. If you have someone that you have been thinking you'd like to bring them one night, bring them on Monday night. That's the one we want them to hear. Then we'll talk on Tuesday about stolen gold and second-rate bronze. Come and see what that one's about. And then on Wednesday, we'll talk about the return of the prodigal. The wayward son comes home, and our question will be, what brought him back? What was done? What did he do? What did his father do to bring him back? And how can we bring the wayward home? And then on Thursday, we'll talk about the seduction of Joseph, a study of Genesis 39, and how he resisted the strong temptation that was placed before him. And then on Friday evening, we're going to conclude by raising the question, who is to blame? It's a textual study of Romans, the 10th chapter. And the question is, if you lose your soul in the day of judgment, who can you blame? Can you point your finger at God and say, God, it's your fault? Can we blame others, or is the finger blamed to be pointed at ourselves? And that'll be a study of Romans, the 10th chapter. If I were to ask you this question, what is happening to your ox? How would you answer that? And you probably would say, I didn't know I had an ox. But you do, in this sense. And so my question again to you is, what's happening to your ox? What would you say to that? And as you contemplate how you'd answer that, I want you to notice that God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath day. And I want you to start with me in Exodus, the 20th chapter, verses 9 through 11. God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath. The text says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but in the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work. You, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and he hallowed it. What I want you to see is God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath. Do no work on the Sabbath day. In fact, not only are you not to work, your servants are not to work, your children are not to work, no one's to be working on the Sabbath day. Let's go a little bit further. Let's go over to the 23rd division of the same book, beginning at verse 12. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your female servant and the stranger may be refreshed. And all that I said to you, be circumspect and make no mention of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth. God's law was so strict on the Sabbath day, he said not even your ox or your donkey could be working on the Sabbath day. That sounds like a very strict law. But let's go one more time. Let's go to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 5. Very similar expressions. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you nor your son nor your daughter nor your manservant nor your maidservant nor your ox or your donkey or any of your cattle or your stranger who is with you within the gates, that your manservant and maidservant may rest as well as you. What do you learn from that? God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath. Nobody's to be working on the Sabbath, not even your ox or your donkey, not your children, not your manservant or your maidservant or their children are to work on the Sabbath day. I want you to notice in every one of those passages, Exodus 20, Exodus 23, Deuteronomy chapter 5, there was no mention at all of an ox being in the ditch, was there? You remember seeing that in any of those? Not at all. But Jesus did mention it in Luke chapter 14, the passage read to us just a moment ago. And I want us to read that again in light of that strict law on the Sabbath. Now it happened as he went into the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath day, that they watched him closely. That is, they're looking for fault, they're looking for problems with Jesus. And behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus answering spoke to the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? It was Jesus who raised that question. But they kept silent, and he took him and he healed him and he let him go. And then Jesus answered and said, look at verse 5. Which of you having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into the pit, the King James says ditch, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? And they could not answer him regarding these things. Now here it is on the Sabbath day, and Jesus said, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? He took the man and he healed the man on the Sabbath day. And having done that, he said, which of you would not do something very similar to this on the Sabbath day? If your ox or your donkey fell into the ditch, you'd lift him out of the ditch on the Sabbath day, wouldn't you? Here's another occasion in Matthew chapter 12. This one's a little bit different. And I want you to notice beginning at verse 9, Matthew chapter 12. Then when he departed from there, he went into the synagogue. And behold, there was a man who had a withered hand. And they ask him, it's them who ask the question this time, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? That they might accuse him, the text says. And he said to them, what man is there among you, if he had one sheep, and it fall into the pit on the Sabbath, would not lay hold of him and lift him out? And how much more value is a man than sheep? Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out, and it was restored as whole as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and plotted against him how they might destroy him. I want us to go one more time to Luke, the 13th division, if you will. Just one chapter before our text in Luke chapter 14. Verse 14, which is not on the screen before you, what we have in verse 14 is the ruler of the synagogue saying to Jesus, you have 6 days, and I'm paraphrasing, you have 6 days in which to heal on the Sabbath. Heal on one of those days and not on the Sabbath day. Just do it another day other than the Sabbath day. And Jesus answered and said to him, hypocrite. Does not each one of you on the Sabbath day loose his ox or his donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it? Now I want you to get the point that's being made in these texts. Let's go back to Luke chapter 14 where Jesus said that if you had an ox fall into the ditch, you would go out and lift that ox out of the ditch on the Sabbath day, wouldn't you? I want you to notice the Pharisees did not disagree. The Pharisees didn't say, now wait a minute, Lord, wait just one minute. You know we have never done that, and we would never do that. There's never been an occasion when we had let our ox out of the donkey out of the stall and lead him away to water, and we've never gone out into the ditch and lifted our ox out of the ditch. We've never done that. They did not disagree with Jesus. The point that Jesus is making is their inconsistency. If your ox fell into the ditch on the Sabbath day, you would go lift him out on the Sabbath day. If you needed to water him on the Sabbath, you would water him on the Sabbath. And I'm merely healing on the Sabbath, and you are being inconsistent by condemning me and approving of the other. What Jesus is saying is this is not a violation of the Sabbath law. You lifting your ox out of the ditch is not a violation of the Sabbath law. And what I'm doing in healing on the Sabbath day is not a violation of the Sabbath law. The point is inconsistency. Here is something I want you to see. Jesus is saying there are times when an emergency situation would arise, you take care of it, and you still observe the Sabbath. When they watered their ox or their donkey on the Sabbath day, they were still observing the Sabbath. They were not working on the Sabbath. When they lifted him out of the ditch in an emergency circumstance, they're not violating the Sabbath law. His point is inconsistency. I want you to keep that in mind as we talk about this principle of the ox fell into the ditch. We often appeal to this principle to exempt our responsibility, don't we? You may not use that exact phrase, you may not use that exact expression, but we often either quote that or we appeal at least to the idea, and here's how we use it. It comforts us to think that this is one of those times when the old ox just fell into the ditch. This is one of those occasions when the ox just fell in the ditch and I can't help it, and I'm therefore exempt from the responsibility I have. So I raise the question, how do we use that ox in the ditch principle? Well, we may use that with reference to our attendance. How so? Well, we may miss more than just a few occasions when we're seriously sick, for example. We may use it more than just, we miss more than just a few occasions. And when we miss, we may use that expression, or at least appeal to the idea, this is just one of those situations, I just can't help it, I just kind of got my ox in the ditch. Have you ever heard that expression? I just kind of got an old ox in the ditch, and you see, I'm exempt from my responsibilities, what I'm saying. All right, here's another way we use that. We may use it with reference to our Bible study.
He said, Brother Hammond, you called on me in Bible class and I wasn't prepared, but I'm sorry. I just really didn't do my lesson this week. And I'll just tell you what happened. I've just had my ox in the ditch, you see. And that explains why I didn't have my Bible lesson this week. And so I really didn't study this week normally, but I just had my ox in the ditch. Or maybe it comes to my principle of prayer. Normally I would like to pray, but I've just been so busy this week and I've had so much going in my life and I've had so many irons in the fire and I've had my ox in the ditch and I haven't prayed like I should. I am exempt from my responsibility. Maybe we use that in another area. For example, it may be in the matter of the husband and wife relationship. We haven't had time to spend with each other and show attention to each other for some time now because of our work schedules and obligations we have. You see, we just have our ox in the ditch and we're exempt from our responsibility. We use it with reference to the rearing and the raising of our children. The things I'm allowing my children to do, normally I wouldn't allow that. But you see, we've just kind of let our kids get away with some things here in the last few months because we've just had so much going on. We've got our ox in the ditch. And so we're exempt from our responsibility. Now, in each one of these situations, we're saying to ourselves and to others, my situation is different from yours. My ox is in the ditch, and therefore I'm exempt from my responsibility. You see how the principle works? Do you have your ox in the ditch? Now you understand why I'm asking you, what's happening to your ox? And let me ask that again to you. What's happening to your ox? Is it that your ox keeps falling into the ditch? Does he just keep falling there? Now, what I ask you was not the question, do you occasionally have an ox fall into the ditch? We all have that to happen once in a while. Jesus acknowledged that in Luke chapter 14. But does your ox keep falling into the ditch? Does your ox seem to stay in the ditch? I mean, he's always there. And thirdly, may I ask you this question. What are you doing to try to keep your ox out of the ditch? What are you doing? Have you tried to take measures so that your ox doesn't fall into the ditch? So let's talk for a little while this morning about the ox falling into the ditch. And I want to talk about three things. Here's the first. I want to talk about the ox falling into the ditch with an emphasis on falling. Jesus acknowledged there are times when there is a legitimate time when the ox does fall into the ditch. But let's go back to Luke 14. And as you peruse through that passage, I want you to look at that and I want you to look and see if you see anything about the idea that this was a planned thing. It doesn't seem to be a planned thing, does it? That is, from the viewpoint of the Jew whose ox fell into the ditch, if he fell into the ditch, that didn't seem to be a thing where they planned, where they began to look. You know what? Today's Friday, tomorrow's the Sabbath day, and if we're going to get that ox in the ditch, we need to get him out of the field and get him up here close to the road if he's going to be in the ditch tomorrow. It wasn't a planned thing, was it? Secondly, it wasn't a regular thing, apparently. Jesus is talking about an occasion when an ox may fall into the ditch, but it didn't seem to be a thing that it was a regular thing, that every Sabbath he's always in the ditch. Nor did it seem to be a thing that was permanent and ongoing. Where the ox is in the ditch, he didn't get out, and the next Sabbath he's still in the ditch, and the next Sabbath he's still in the ditch, and the next Sabbath he's still in the ditch, maybe skip a Sabbath or two and then he's in the ditch again. Furthermore, this didn't seem to be a thing that was common, but it seems to be rare, that there are rare occasions when the ox would fall into the ditch. Now you think about the statistics of that. I'm not a statistician, but I think I can do this one. What would be the chances, if your ox fell into the ditch on the average of once a week, that it would always fall on the Sabbath? Wouldn't you think once in a while it would fall on the first day? Maybe once in a while on the second, sometimes on the third, but would it always fall on the Sabbath day every time? I wouldn't think so. I don't know what the statistics come out, but I would think somewhere along the line it would somehow hit on some of the other days once in a while, wouldn't it? Didn't seem to be a common thing, but rather a rare thing. Neither was it something that would take all day. And you say, how do you know that? Because Jesus is observing the fact that I am not violating the Sabbath any more than you are. They could pull the ox out of the ditch and still observe the Sabbath day. So that tells me it wasn't something that took all day. They could still observe the Sabbath day. Luke chapter 14 and verse 5. Now, let's take this principle furthermore, that it didn't seem to be a welcome thing. Can you imagine a Jew who looks out on the Sabbath day morning, looks out of his house, and he looks out to the ditch, and there's the old ox standing in the ditch, and, oh, I am so delighted. I didn't think it was going to happen today, but I am so glad the ox is in the ditch. But it would be an unwelcome thing that I've got to go lift that ox out of the ditch. I hate that, but I'm going to do it. But I'm going to try next week to get the things fixed and the fence fixed and the barn fixed where it doesn't happen again. I want us to take those principles and contrast that with what we see in our present day. And it may be something that's amusing and we smile at the ox being in the ditch when I ask you, what's happening to your ox? But I want to tell you what's happening to our ox. That quite often with reference to our ox is in the ditch and he stays in the ditch. In contrast to this idea that it's not a planned thing, there are times that we plan and we schedule things that we know will put our ox in the ditch. We plan and we schedule. And we know that when we do that, that's putting our ox right in the middle of the ditch. What a contrast. In contrast to it not being a regular thing, there are some Christians whose ox is always in the ditch. I don't know how it'll be this week here in this meeting. But when we have a gospel meeting at home, there are some families that on Sunday morning like this, if you ask and poll the brethren, and you ask them, are you going to be here every service? That's, oh, well, sure I am. I wouldn't miss the meeting for anything. There's not any reason why I'd miss a service, and they'll miss three services that week, I'll guarantee you. I'll guarantee you. They'll have an ox in the ditch three nights that week. But on Sunday, they're not planning that. But they'll have their ox in the ditch at least three nights during the meeting. Guaranteed. Is that going to happen this week with you? In contrast to it not being a permanent and ongoing thing, this is something that continues for years. Circumstance which I just mentioned. It happened the last meeting. It happened the meeting before. It'll happen the meeting that we have next and the meeting after that. Because that's what it always does. It's what always happens. Is that happening with you? What's happening to your ox? Does it continue for years? In contrast to what we saw in Luke 14, it wasn't something that took all day. Not a common but a rare thing. This happens all the time. In contrast to it not taking all day, they could still observe the Sabbath. There are people who are being hindered from worship. When our ox gets in the ditch, we're not able to come Sunday morning. And quite often not Sunday night. And not the next week either. Because our ox is in the ditch. It is keeping us from serving the Lord. And in contrast to it not being a welcome thing, when our ox is in the ditch, I find brethren sometimes are not bothered at all by that. I'm sorry. I don't know how it is with you, but I have met brethren who are not able, in their mind, their ox is in the ditch, and they don't worship Sunday morning, and they don't worship Sunday night. And they don't worship the next week. And they don't worship the next week. They may show up for one the following week, but then the next week they don't worship either service. And their attitude is kind of like, sorry. They're not bothered by that. Do you understand what I'm asking when I ask you what's happening to your ox? Let's move secondly to something else. We've talked about the ox falling into the ditch. I want to talk about the ox being helped into the ditch. The ox is in the ditch, but the question is, how did he get there? Whose footprints are along the roadside? Are those yours? Ox is in the ditch, but did you help him get there? Could the ox been pushed just a little bit? I want you to consider with me that it's possible to create a circumstance where we know the ox is likely to fall into the ditch. Now picture with me. Can you imagine a Jew doing this? Digging a ditch on Friday. Carelessly leaving the gate unlocked. Maybe even taking the old ox and standing him in the middle of the road and leaving him there on Friday night, and then gets up on the Sabbath day and is surprised he's in the ditch. Well, no wonder. Could you not dug that ditch another day? Could you not double-check the gate? Did you have to leave him standing in the middle of the road? Now, he didn't push him into the ditch. I understand that. No, he didn't do that. But he created a circumstance where he knew he was likely to fall into the ditch. Have you done that? What I want to suggest to you is that oftentimes we create a circumstance by our conflict. We create conflicts, rather, by our carelessness. With things that we schedule with school and sports and jobs and our hobbies. Wherein we know that our ox is likely to fall into the ditch. I was in a gospel meeting several years ago and announced, as I did just a moment ago, what my topics would be for the week.
And on Monday or Tuesday night, I had supper with a family who said, "Brother Ray, to that lesson you've got planned for Thursday night, I sure wished our family could hear it. Our children need to hear that. Oh, we just love for them to hear that. And we're just not going to be able to make it on Thursday night, but we sure wished our children could hear that." And they said enough about that that I finally asked, sitting at their dinner table, "Well, what is it that makes it so that your family can't be there on Thursday night?" "Well, you see, we bought tickets to the basketball tournament. And we didn't know about the conflict in the meeting. When we bought them, we didn't check the meeting schedule. We didn't know it was the week of the meeting. And if we don't go, we'll lose $50 in our tickets. And so we're going to the basketball tournament, and we won't be able to be there on Thursday night." They might not have pushed their ox in the ditch, but they sure created a circumstance where he fell into the ditch, didn't they? And on that occasion, the $50 meant more to them than their children hearing something that may have saved their souls. But I want to go a step further. Is it possible that we push the ox into the ditch? Is it possible that we understand, you know, the ox being in the ditch is a legitimate thing, and there is a time when that's excusable because Jesus acknowledged that. And so since the ox can be in the ditch on the Sabbath day, things may be okay. Is it possible that I just go ahead and just give him a little shove and push him off into the ditch on the Sabbath day? How so? Do we sometimes deliberately make plans when we could have done better with reference to our schedules? That I make a plan with the school, I make a plan with my job, I make a plan with the family, I make a plan for vacation, I make a plan in various directions that I could have done better. Perhaps I schedule to work and I don't even try to get off. I appreciate those Christians who, when they take a job interview, that they say, "I'm not working on the Lord's Day, and I don't work on Sunday morning, and I don't work on Sunday evening, and I'm going to be at the worship service. Now I'm going to do what I have to do. Now I'll come in early, stay up late, I'll swap schedule, whatever I have to do, but I'm going to worship my Lord." Rather than pushing their ox into the ditch. Let me put a footnote in here that I want to suggest to you. That I'm not suggesting that every time someone works that that's wrong, but let me illustrate that with a doctor. I've preached in places where there were doctors in the members of the church, and they had to work on the Lord's Day. I've been preaching along and a doctor get a page and he's got to go do emergency surgery. There was a wreck on the highway and save someone's life. And so he had an ox fall into the ditch. I understand that. I've been preaching along and a doctor gets a page. He's got to go deliver a baby. Couldn't wait. And so he jumps up and he runs to the hospital and delivers a baby. I understand that. Their ox was falling into the ditch. But can you see a difference in that and the doctor who volunteers to work the emergency room on the Lord's Day? And the doctor who schedules office visits on the Lord's Day because he can make some extra money. Is there a difference in that? I think there's a big difference in that. What are you doing to keep your ox out of the ditch? Several years ago, one of our members, I noticed he'd miss Sunday morning and Sunday night, and then the next week he missed Sunday morning and Sunday night, and then by the third week he was missing Sunday morning and Sunday night, I began to inquire of his wife, "Where is he?" And she said, "Well, he's working." And I was a little puzzled because the plant didn't work on Sunday normally. And I said, "The plant where he works didn't work? Oh, yeah, they're working today." "Well, this is surprising. I'm surprising they made him work." And she said, "Oh, yeah, they won't let him off. They made him work. He'd lose his job if he didn't work." And then it began to dawn on me that two of our elders worked at the same plant, and I think doing much the same job that this man was doing. And so I walked up to these two elders and I said, "What's going on with Brother So-and-so? He's working today and y'all are not." And they said, "Yes, we are." I said, "No, you're not. You're here." They said, "Oh, yeah, we're working today." "What do you mean you're working today?" "We went in at 3 o'clock this morning and got off in time to go to worship because we told them we'd have to be at worship. And then we're going back this afternoon and then we'll work to service time. And then we're going to go back after service tonight and work to midnight to make up for the lost time. We're going in at those hours, but we're going to be here at worship service." Now, you know what my next question was. Could he have done the same thing to keep his ox out of the ditch? And the elder said, "Oh, yeah, he could have done the same thing, but he didn't do it." You see what I'm talking about when I say we schedule to work and we don't even try to get off? We make plans that we know will keep us from worship. We make choices that we know will put our ox right in the middle of the ditch. Now I want to move to this question. What's happening to our attendance? What's going on with our attendance? If I were to conduct this as a Bible class, which I'm not, but if I were to ask you, write down on a piece of paper legitimate excuses or reasons why one could miss the worship assembly, what would you write down? And when you get through writing that list, you've written down, here's the Lord will approve of me missing for this reason and for this reason. My next question to you is, how do you know? How do you know that God approves of that? How do you know? Probably put sickness. Okay, we all accept that. You might have put work. And while you contemplate that, let me ask you this. Can you see how our excuses become accepted? Here's what I mean by that. You probably put down sickness in your mind. But can you see how that, because sickness is an accepted thing. Okay, if we took a poll, everybody would raise a hand. Sickness is a legitimate reason. Can you see that breeds acceptance, that any ailment or any pain justifies me missing the worship services? I'm saying that's the way it ought to be. That's just what happens, isn't it? And you may have put down work. Can you see that because work becomes an accepted reason or excuse, that breeds acceptance, that any job or anything that needs to be done? You say people don't reason that way. Well, yes, they do. I've had people to miss services for doing something like moving gravel and spreading gravel on their driveway. And when questioned, well, could I have worked today? I could have gone to work and worked overtime and everybody would have accepted that. And then I could have paid somebody to spread my gravel and move my gravel. So what's the difference? I'll just stay home and spread gravel. Brethren, reason that way. I want to suggest to you that our announcements may be sending the wrong signal. Now, when I say our announcements, I am not being condemning of these announcements because I make them myself. But here's what I mean by that. We'll announce something like, Sister so-and-so is sick this morning and unable to be with us. And Brother so-and-so is working today. And then we begin to inquire, why is it, what's wrong with Sister so-and-so? You say she's sick. Is it the flu? Is it a virus? What's wrong with it? Oh, there's a little tired. Kind of felt tired today and just a little bit of a headache and felt coming on and just felt like maybe she ought to stay in today. Well, Brother so-and-so, you say he's working. I didn't know he had to work. Well, he volunteered, you see. He volunteered to work overtime. See, it's double time on Sunday and he volunteered. And when I say it sends the wrong signal, can you see that sends a signal? Don't push yourself. Don't push yourself because any ailment justifies you missing. We just announced to everybody that we basically approved of Sister so-and-so not being here, but come to find out she stayed home because she was tired. And we said, Brother so-and-so is not here. And what that sent a signal saying is that work always justifies missing. Since I was forced to work on this occasion, then I can volunteer to work on this occasion. And nothing wrong with that. It may be sending the wrong signal.
I want to list four things with you that I suggest challenges my thinking. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25. These four things challenge my thinking about attendance. Hebrews 10:25 says, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is. And you hear that quoted many times, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves. I'm more interested at this juncture in this phrase, as the manner of some is. The textual context of chapter 10, chapter 12, the historical context, point to the fact that something was causing these people to miss. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is. Paraphrase, as some are presently doing. Now, why is it that some are forsaking the assembly? It's either the context, the historical and textual context, is pointing to persecution, or the text doesn't give us any clue at all. I like what Barnes says. Barnes says, some may have been deterred by the fear of persecution as those who were thus assembled were more exposed to danger than others. Author Pink says the same thing. And what that says is, the thing that was causing these people to, I'm not going to go to services, but maybe I'm not going to assemble, is they were fearful that maybe their lives would be taken, their houses would be ransacked. And the text says, don't let that keep you from worshiping with the saints. I want to tell you, that challenges my thinking when I'm thinking about sitting at home because, you know what, I'm a little bit tired. And when these people were being threatened with their lives, and they're told, you're going to the assembly anyway. Their houses may be ransacked, not by a thief, but by a persecutor who's doing that because of their allegiance to the Lord. And the text says, you go on to the assembly anyway.
And when I'm thinking about volunteering because I can get double time, that passage there challenges my thinking about that. When persecution was an accepted reason for missing the assembly, then that makes everything else fade and pale in comparison, doesn't it? I'm going to tell you something else that challenges my thinking. Strange passage to go to on attendance.
Well, let's turn to Numbers 28 and 29. You say, there's nothing about attendance, and I understand that, but there's a principle there I want you to notice.
I had an elder in the church several years ago make this point to me from Numbers 28 and 29, and I never have forgotten it, and that is, I want you to look for this word besides. And I want you to see that one responsibility you have does not negate another responsibility. Quite often someone says, you know I have the responsibility to worship the Lord, but you see, I've got a responsibility to feed my family and take care of my family and work, etc., and I've got responsibility, and they start listing other responsibilities. Well, you're exactly right. You have those responsibilities, but this one here does not outweigh and override this responsibility. How do you know?
Let's start reading in Numbers 28. Numbers 28. You might notice the number of times the word besides.
Look at verse 10. This is the burnt offering for every Sabbath. Here's your word. Besides the regular burnt offering. Now, the fact that you'd offer this other offering doesn't mean you don't offer the previous one. You still have that one too. Let's go a little bit further. Look at verse 15. Also, one kid goat as a sin offering to the Lord shall be offered, here's your word, besides the regular burnt offering. Go a little bit further. Look at verse 24. And it shall be offered besides the regular burnt offering. Look at verse 31. Be sure that they are without blemish. And you shall present them as a drink offering besides the regular burnt offering. And then there's about a half a dozen more times in chapter 29. You see the point? And you say, well, I've got this responsibility over here. I've just got a responsibility as a worker. You're exactly right. But that responsibility is besides the responsibility to worship and serve the Lord. All I'm trying to say to you is that challenges my thinking.
That challenges my thinking. Let me give you a third of the fourth.
Let me tell you about it. True story of some archery champs back in the mid-80s.
There were members of the church who are, I think, now living in Colorado. Some of you may have known the couple. I was told about them by a brother in the Lord that had worked with them, but there was a man who was the men's national archery champion at the time. She was the women's national archery champion. And everyone who knew them knew how good they were. They told them, you need to go try out for the Olympics because you both will get
a gold medal.
And so they decided they'd try out for the Olympics. And wouldn't you know it, the tryouts were on Wednesday night. What would you have done? You might justify it from the vantage point. You know what, if you win a gold medal, that leads to commercial endorsements and money, and it's, after all, just Wednesday night.
You know what they did?
No Olympics. No Olympics. Now, my question is not to you,
did they have to do that? That is not even my point.
My point is, that challenges my thinking. When I'm thinking about maybe missing the assembly, and maybe this is a justifiable reason, when here's someone who forfeited a chance at a gold medal, maybe a lot of money they were giving up, I don't know,
and they chose not to go, that challenges my thinking.
That's the point I want you to see. Let me tell you another story.
I had breakfast one morning at a meeting in the northern part of Alabama.
And as we were sitting around eating breakfast with several men at the table, several men went out to breakfast one morning. There was an older brother sat right beside me. He was probably 20 or 30 years older than I was at the time, and began to detect that he had not been a Christian that many years, and so I began to ask him, how did you get to know the gospel? Who taught you the gospel? How did you get to come to know? Apparently his parents weren't Christians, and none of his family, and so just him and his wife. How did you get to know the gospel?
He said, I'll tell you, that's interesting. He said, I don't know what job he had, but part of the job was loading railroad cars. And he said, normally we didn't work on Sunday.
But he said there was one Saturday that we had a big order to come, and
or go out. And so I called all my men together and I told them, he said, I was not a Christian, but I called all my men together and I told them, you're working tomorrow, Sunday. You're going to have to work. You don't normally work on Sunday, but you're going to work on Sunday. We're going to load these railroad cars. No questions asked, no exception. And you don't show up for work, you'll be fired. And I dismissed my men. And he said, I had one brother, one young employee come up to me and just said, well, just go ahead and fire me now because I won't be here tomorrow. And I asked him why, and he said, because I'm going to go to worship and I won't be working. He said, this man's religion meant more to him than his job, so I had to know more about his religion. And when I asked him about his religion and why he felt so strong about that, he began to teach me the gospel, and he was the man that converted me and brought me to the Lord because he stood up and refused to work for me. That's how I got to know the Lord. And that's why I'm a Christian now. And my question to you is, would you have converted your boss? Would you? And you say, well, I think he'd been justified if he'd worked. That's not my point. My point is that challenges my thinking, doesn't it, Jim? That challenges my thinking about attendance. Would you have converted your boss? The last thing I want to share with you, and the lesson will be yours. Let's talk about keeping the ox out of the ditch. And by that, I want to raise this question, and that is, what are you doing to keep your ox out of the ditch? Sometimes the ox falls into the ditch. Sometimes he falls because of our carelessness. Sometimes we kind of help him in that direction. We kind of coach him along and show him where the gate is open. And then there are times we just deliberately just shove him off in the ditch. But what are you doing to keep your ox out of the ditch? What can you do? Well, here's some things you can do. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13. These are fundamental basic principles. Here's what you can do to keep your ox out of the ditch. Just remember what your purpose in life is. In Ecclesiastes, the preacher is pursuing the question of life under the sun. And what is life under the sun? And to give kind of a thumbnail description of that, after pursuing wealth and power and fame and everything under the sun, he finally comes to the conclusion at the end of the book, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. This is what life is about. This is my purpose in life, to fear God and keep his commandments. And if I keep that before me, that my job and my responsibility, my whole responsibility before God is to fear God and keep his commandments. I'm not here to make a living. I'm not here to get wealthy. I'm not here to get wise. I'm here to serve my Lord. That'll help me in a long way to keep my ox out of the ditch. I'm going to do everything in harmony with that principle. Secondly, I'm going to get my priorities straight. Let's look at Luke, the 9th chapter, if you will. Get your priorities straight. In Luke chapter 9, and beginning at verse 57, it happened one day as he journeyed on a road that someone said, Lord, I will follow you wherever you go. Kind of impulsive, isn't it? I'll do anything you want me to do. And Jesus said, foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And he said, do another follow me. And he said, first let me go bury my father. And I've always been puzzled about that. Was it that his father is still living and that I'm going to serve him and be with my father, and when he's dead and buried, then I'll come and follow you? Or was it that his father had died and I want to go see to that, and once I've seen to that, then I'll come and follow you? Whatever the case was, Jesus didn't think much of it, because I noticed that Jesus said, let the dead bury their dead, but you go and preach the kingdom of God. And then another said to him, Lord, I will follow you, but first let me bid them farewell at my father's house. I just got something I need to see to first. And Jesus said, no one having put his hand to the plow, looking back, is fit for the kingdom. Jesus is talking about priorities. You want to keep your ox out of the ditch, you get your priorities straight. Remember what your purpose in life is, and you get your priorities straight. And thirdly, you sacrifice more to serve the Lord. Here's a very short parable. Get it in one verse. Matthew, the 13th division. Notice in verse 44, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a man who found a treasure hidden in a field, and for the joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has to buy that field. Do you get the concept? Service and the dedication to the Lord is worth any sacrifice and every sacrifice you have to make. And here's a man who found this treasure in the field, and it was so valuable that he's willing to sacrifice everything he had. It doesn't matter what he was. He sold it all that he might have that field. That's the kingdom of heaven, he said. Do you so value your service to the Lord and your allegiance to the Lord? I'm willing to sacrifice everything and anything I've got. I don't care what it is. Relationships, if I have to. to serve the Lord.
Well, here's something else I can do.
I need to seek wisdom to foresee the conflicts ahead of time. Part of our problem is that we plan things, and someone asks, can you work this day? Oh, yeah, I'll work that. They put me down, and then I look and say, you know what?
I didn't realize that was a Sunday that I offered and volunteered to work. Maybe I ought to have a little wisdom and look ahead.
And when I buy those tickets for that concert, or that ball game, or that whatever, I might double check my calendar and find out if that was the Lord's day, or maybe it was a Wednesday, or maybe it was during the gospel meeting.
Proverbs 22 and verse 3 talks about a prudent man foresees evil and he hides himself. He looks ahead to see if there's a conflict.
That's part of Ephesians 5 of walking in wisdom, walking circumspectly. And finally, what can I do to keep my ox out of the ditch?
I need to consider the consequences if I don't keep him out. What do we mean by that?
Well, I want you to consider with me, Jesus made use of this principle, Luke 14. Meaning by that, what Jesus said is the old ox sometimes does fall into the ditch. Jesus used that principle. We sometimes abuse the application. We abuse it by helping or pushing the ox sometimes in the ditch. And our children, listen to me carefully as I suggest to you, our children will become loose as a result. What do we mean? You can just mark it down. If you've got an ox in the ditch all the time, your children are going to have more oxen and they're going to be in more ditches than you ever dreamed of. And so you teach your children this principle, the old ox is in the ditch, and this is just fine. You can just mark it down. Your children are going to have more oxen and more ditches than you ever imagined. So what do?
If your ox is continuing in the ditch, you either need to shoot the ox or you need to fill the ditch. In other words, something needs to be done about your ox. Something needs to be done.
Shoot that ox, fill the ditch, keep him out of the ditch.
Do whatever it takes that you might keep that ox out of the ditch. What have we seen this morning? Well, maybe that's kind of a unique approach. Gets a smile when I ask you, what's happening to your ox? You didn't know you had one. You do have one, don't you? What are you doing with your ox? Does he fall in the ditch?
Are you helping him in the ditch? And what are you doing to keep that ox out of the ditch?
May God help us to figure out what it takes to keep our ox out of the ditch,
that we might be the people God would have us to be. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come this morning believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith in Christ, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?